Welcome to the Oldie Podcast. This is from our literary lunch featuring guest speakers and kindly sponsored by Charles Stanley Wealth Managers. Our lunches are held monthly. Details and how to book can be found in our magazine and on the website at www.theoldie.co.uk.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for coming to the Oldie Lunch today. I am the editor of the greatest magazine in the universe, the Oldie. And we're only here thanks to the kindness of our sponsors, Charles Stanley. I'm actually standing in for the late, great Barry Cryer, who used to do this job as MC. And still today, his jokes account for a third of our website traffic. Only at the Oldie would a dead comedian top the charts. But so here's his joke, which topped the charts this week, which is about an old man is having a massage from a lovely, beautiful young masseuse. And she says, "Do you fancy super sex?" And he says, "On balance, I'll have the soup." Now, I must say, as well as our having our three terrific speakers here today, we also happen to have the world's greatest war photographer, Sir Don McCullen, sitting next to us. And so I must give you a health and safety warning that wherever Don is, there's usually a terrifying battle happening nearby. So I'd ask all Oldie lunchers not to attack each other with a National Liberal Club cutlery, please. Don hit the top of our Oldie website chart last year with his wonderful quote saying he finds the bathroom today more terrifying than Vietnam. But our first speaker is an old friend of Don and worked with him in many countries. He's the distinguished journalist and writer Charles Glass, who's been a journalist and writer for over 50 years and as chief Middle East correspondent for ABC News in 1987. Charlie was abducted and held hostage for 2 months before dazzlingly escaping from his Shiite Muslim captors. He's written many celebrated books about the Middle East and the Second World War. His latest book about the First World War, it's called Soldiers Don't Go Mad, and it's a poignant history of the friendship between Siegfried Sassoon and Wilfred Owen. Charlie Glass.
You smug-faced crowd with the kindling eye, who cheer as soldier lads march by, go home and pray, you never know the hell where youth and laughter goes. Sassoon wrote that in a psychiatric hospital called Craven Lockhart when he was diagnosed for shell shock, which he didn't have. He was actually sent there as a political refugee, as a political prisoner, because he had written a protest against the war, having lived in the trenches and watched his closest friends die and seen thousands of men under his command wounded. He couldn't take it anymore when he was wounded himself and was back in Britain and met with Bertrand Russell and other pacifists and came to the conclusion that the war was wrong, that Britain was fighting for immoral reasons. This psychiatric hospital called Craig Lockhart War Hospital for Officers was founded in October of 1916. And the reason it was founded, along with a number of other hospitals, was that there was a new phenomenon on the battlefield that had happened in very small numbers in previous wars, ones, twos, threes, including the Crimea, including the American Civil War. But in this war, which was the first industrial war, massive weapons, flamethrowers, chemical weapons, heavy, high explosive, high velocity artillery, men living underground for months at a time, at the casualty clearing stations, it was set up along the front lines. Thousands of wounded would be brought in every day, but about a quarter of the wounded had no wounds. No bullet holes, no shrapnel wounds, no gas wounds. But they were like this. They were shaking. They were trembling. They were paralyzed. They were blind. They couldn't hear. They couldn't speak. And they didn't know what to do with them. There were so many. And psychiatry was a new science. There weren't enough psychiatrists. So they began to open mental hospitals all around Britain. And one was open just outside Edinburgh called Craig Lockhart Mental Hospital for Officers. Remember that on the 1st of July, 1917, General Haig launched his famous big push at the Somme. That morning at 6 o'clock, British troops marched into no man's land, which is a land of craters, landmines, barbed wire, and 20,000 British troops died that morning. 20,000. To give you a point of comparison, 20,000 people had still not died in Ukraine after 2 years. 20,000 one morning, 40,000 wounded, and of those 40,000, 20,000 mentally wounded. They had to deal with it. Many of the officers in the high command believed that these young men who were shaking, who couldn't fight anymore, were cowards. 300 of them were put on trial and executed. But most of them were sent back to Britain to be treated by psychiatrists, some successfully, some unsuccessfully. The best hospital was the one I'd written my book about. The book is not just about Sassoon and Owen, who are two of the main characters of the book. It's about this institution and the attempts by British military medical establishment to recycle these men. Recycle, like recycling a damaged tank or a truck, to recycle them to get them back to the front, especially the subalterns who were dying and being wounded and being mentally destroyed out of all proportion to their numbers, and they were very much needed at the front. So they would go through the treatment, and when the psychiatrist approved them, the medical board would send them back to their units and they could fight again. The whole point was to get them back to fight again. While they were at Craig Lockhart, two of the best clinical psychiatrists in the country, Dr. William Hulse Rivers and Dr. Arthur Brock, treated these men in very different ways, although both were Freudians. Both had studied psychology in Germany, which was the epicenter of psychological studies at the time, and by the way, had no animosity towards the Germans, unlike most people in the country at the time. They finally certified Owen, who met Sassoon at Craig Lockhart, and Owen, who worshipped Sassoon, and went to him 3 weeks after Sassoon arrived at Craig Lockhart with copies of his book, The Old Huntsman and other poems, asked him to sign them. And as he left, he said, by the way, I'm a poet too. And Sassoon didn't really take it on board, but they started meeting daily, and Sassoon realized, or came to the conclusion, that Owen was probably a better poet than he was. They helped each other to write their poems. They corrected each other's poems. For example, Anthem for Doomed Youth was the title of one of Owen's best poems, but Sassoon gave him the title. And he was very much beholden. Each one thought the other was the better poet. They were very, very close. Owen went back to the front, and having believed himself that he was a coward, and that the reason he broke down was because he was a coward, he actually won the Military Cross, led his men in battle for 2 months at the front, and then was killed leading a charge of his platoon across a canal, the Sambre-Oise Canal. It was cut down by rifle fire 4 days before the end of the war. Sassoon didn't learn about it for another 6 months, and then he was devastated that this young man with whom he had been so close had died this way. Sassoon, although he was not himself shell-shocked in his own mind, when he finally agreed to not to make an issue of his protest and agreed to fight again because he felt very obligated to the men of his platoon that he had to leave them, he couldn't abandon them. He went back to the front, he was wounded again. But when he came back, he was wounded, he really was shell-shocked, and he was sent back to Craig Lockhart for treatment. And he probably was shell-shocked for the rest of his life. He spent the rest of his life writing probably the best memoirs about war ever written, memoirs of the fox hunting man, memoirs of infantry officer, and so forth. And his poetry never got as good as it had been when he was writing about the war. this story, which I hope some of you, I know you all won't because people just don't, but I hope some of you will take the time to read the book to understand how war doesn't just destroy bodies, doesn't just destroy buildings, but it destroys minds in the most awful, awful way. Not only because of what happens to you and your comrades, but because of what you know you're doing to the comrades on the other side. Owen, when he was at Craig Lockhart, took classes in German so that after the war he could go to Germany and build bridges with the German soldiers that he had been killing. Something happens to you when you're killing people, and you don't feel good about it unless you're a psychopath. And there are obviously psychopaths in war, but most people were not, and most people felt very bad about it. A whole generation, 2 million men on both sides, killed because older men had sent them to die. And even to this day, if anybody can tell me what the objective of the First World War is or was, what the point of it was, what the objective of it was, I will give you a Pulitzer Prize or a big trophy or something, because nobody, especially those survivors who came back wounded, without legs, without eyes, without mental capacities, who came back after the war, they didn't believe in it. It's for that reason that Gertrude Stein later called them the Lost Generation. And they were the ones who went on. I spoke to a family whose grandfather, 40 years after the war, whenever a car would explode, he would jump under his bed screaming. You don't recover from these things. Craig Lockhart, they got them to recover to the extent that they go back and fight. But the long-term effects don't leave you. When Craig Lockhart closed in April of 1919, it was not because it wasn't successful. It was treating men. It's because they weren't needed anymore. The war was over. They didn't need to be recycled. They could just go back to their families or go to county lunatic asylums and be forgotten as they were. So anyways, that's why when I started out, I said, I can't really beat Harry with the jokes because this is not a funny book. There were many funny episodes at Craig Lockhart. It was like a public school. They had an in-house journal where they traded jokes, and they played sports, and they communicated amongst themselves in a school. But that was in the daytime. At night, the corridors of Craig Lockhart would be filled with the screams of agonized men, of agonized boys, so much so that the VAD nurses would be crying because they couldn't listen to these kids anymore. It was just too much to take. And that's where they felt those old men had sent them, to that hell where youth laughter goes.
Thank you so much, Charlie, for an extremely moving speech.
You have been listening to the Oldie Podcast. Please share this episode. Look out for the Oldie magazine subscription offer on our website www.theoldie.co.uk. Thank you and good luck.